Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
(582-9933) All right, let's see. We have got no audio from me. No audio from me? Okay, hang on a second. It's going out on the access. Oh, okay. Apparently, okay. Things are all well and good now. Yes. All right, there we are. Okay. Where were we? I was so distracted there. Actually, before I get back to the news here, I was in the chat room talking to people, and we're talking we spend a lot of time chatting about preparations for what appear to be some very, very difficult times ahead. And we were talking about, you know, guns and silver and seeds and all the rest of that. I was talking about crossbows because when I was in college, I was on my college archery team. I took my varsity letter in arrow. So we've actually been looking possibly at, you know, one of those nice military-style crossbows just to go out and bag a wild pig if we need to eat something and, you know, basically deal with other vermin and pests that show up on our doorstep. But just at that same moment, I was going around the dial on the TV, and, you know, the Olympics are on, and people are watching, and there's the curling competition. And the commentator is up there talking. He's describing this one curler who's just pushing the thing as the Tiger Woods of curling. And at some point, and I guess if you're just coming into it cold, it just, the absurdity of the statement is just there. Now, I don't want to diss or insult anybody for their athletic activity, but the original purpose of the Olympics in ancient times was to focus on those skills that actually had a utilitarian purpose. The hammer was a weapon. So was the discus. So was the javelin. Running and jumping were all part of the training that soldiers with spears and swords and shields had to go through. Now, skiing and these various other tracks, you know, hurdling, getting over the barricades of a fort, pole vaulting, same thing, getting over the walls of a fort. It's all militarily related. The winter sports, skiing. Remember, during World War II, we had military units, army units on skis crossing the country. And, you know, triathlon, you know, skiing, shooting, and all the rest of that stuff. It's all militarily related. Some of the newer sports seem to be getting away from that. I don't know what curling is supposed to be about. But for them to go out there and start saying, yes, this is the Tiger Woods of curling, it seems sometimes it reaches a little bit of absurdity in the descriptions. And like I said, I'm not insulting anybody having fun doing what they're doing, but the attempt by the corporate media to somehow generate an excitement there sometimes gets a little absurd. I guess it's true also of golf. I mean, I don't understand who watches golf. It's boring, you know, and I'm sorry. And I've played golf. I don't even want to watch me play golf. That's how boring it is. All right, getting back to the more serious stuff here. As you heard on the news break, there is a debate in Congress about, you know, the health care reform, and basically the debate is, you know, how much and who we're going to gouge for more money here. Harkin is basically out there admitting that the public option is dead. There's going to be no public, nonprofit insurance option available for the American people. Why? Well, very simple, because the insurance companies, the for-profit insurance companies, were very generous with the campaign contributions last election and will be again going into November. So what Barack Obama is going to do, he is going to guarantee that every American has health insurance coverage by ordering all Americans to go out and buy health insurance coverage from the for-profit health insurance companies that were so generous with their campaign contributions. And going into November, I can guarantee you're going to have the president stand up there and say, our party made sure that all Americans had health insurance. And they're going to say it like it's a really good thing and like the government is responsible, when the government is simply coercing us and telling us where to spend what little money we have left. And if you're being forced to spend your money on something, it's another form of taxation. And my argument with all of this is that when we voted for a president for hope and change and health care reform, what we wanted was what they have in other countries like France, or Norway or Canada, where, yes, you're paying very high taxes, but the government takes that tax money and it takes care of you. Provides health care, provides higher education, keeps the roads repaired, keeps the bridges inspected, keeps the flood control intact, keeps the dry brush under control so the place isn't burning up. That is mature, responsible government. In the United States, they're taking the same amount of money, and it goes to war and bombs and Israel and corruption and Wall Street. And we, the American people, after paying this huge chunk of money for taxes, we are then expected to pay for our own health care and our own higher education, very often going so deeply into debt that the supposed benefits of a college degree on your paycheck may not actually materialize for 20, 30 years while you pay off all those student loans. And this health care reform they're talking about now is more of exactly the same. They're still going to take high taxes from us, and they're going to spend it on war and Wall Street and Israel, and the roads are still crumbling, and you're still having to pay for your own health care and your own health care insurance and your own higher education. We've got large pieces of the country burning down because the debt brush is not being cleared, massive floods because the flood control isn't being taken care of. And all our government can think of doing is convincing you that the Earth's destruction is all your fault so they can charge you another tax for it. And it's almost kind of ironic to see Obama out there talking about taking care of planet Earth in the context of the supposed human-caused global warming, and yet at the same time, he's completely neglecting our country. I mean, that is, to me, one of the most fundamental hypocrisies of the Obama administration, that they'll get out there and they'll talk about wanting to preserve the Earth for future generations. At the same time, they're not willing to take care of the country we have here and now. And I think that's a major, major disconnect. And everybody ought to be looking at that going into November. Now, why is the health care reform really such a total circus? Why is it totally concerned with money and the whole health care bill? If you read through it all, it's all about money. There's not actually anything about health care in the health care reform. It's all about money, where it comes from, who gets it, who divvies it up. There's nothing in there about actually improving the quality of care. There's nothing in there about saying maybe we ought not to let people be eating monosodium glutamate or aspartame or synthetic bovine growth hormone or any of the other zillions of chemicals that are put into our food, which really have not been adequately tested. And by the way, Monsanto's in trouble again for fudging some of their reports about the possible adverse effects of their genetically modified crops. I mean, that's how completely out of control it is. Our Congress is out there bashing Toyota over a gas pedal, and yet Monsanto is playing, you know, reckless with genetics, the most dangerous technology on Earth, and going, yee-haw, ride 'em cowboy, with their crops around the world, and they're causing all kinds of damage, which could very easily run out of control. But no, we're going to go bash on Toyota today because they're Japanese. They're foreign. They're a threat to American industry. Actually, American industry destroyed itself. They didn't need Toyota's help. But the reason for the health care reform is so corrupt, and it's all about money, and it's all about gouging you for more money for less care, is a very simple thing. There are 8 healthcare lobbyists in Washington, D.C. for every single member of Congress. 8. And I'm willing to wager that at least a couple of them are a really hot babe for the male members of Congress. Maybe I'm being presumptive. There's going to be a lot of hot young bodies among those lobbyists because that's the way it works. And that's the reason why Congress isn't paying attention to you anymore. As long as they've got the vote fraud, as long as they've got those electronic voting machines, Congress will continue to listen to whoever's got the money, you know, whoever's got the hot body, and, of course, anybody from Israel. So that's what this debate is all about, is just finding another way to take more money from you. All right, we're going to take another break here for commercials. When we come back, we're going to be talking about a scandal that is reemerging because of a rather reckless comment that Bernanke made before the Congress in the last couple of days. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors. Join us on the air, 866-582-9933.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
listening to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We've got a lot of news to get through. I want to talk about this Paul Thorsen, this scientist who was the principal investigator, supposedly, on numerous scientific reports that were cited by the CDC and pharmaceutical industries as absolutely proving that there was no connection between Merck-based preservatives like thimerosal in vaccines and the epidemic of autism that is sweeping across the American nation. We have far more incidents of autism than any other country. Interestingly enough, if you look at the Amish community, Amish children who are not vaccinated never become autistic. Somebody sent me an article, oh, yes, there's Amish kids who are autistic, but then you go in and you find out that they got talked into vaccinating their children, and they wound up with autistic children. The children who are not vaccinated, Amish children who are not vaccinated, do not become autistic. So we're getting back to Paul Thorsen, who made a huge amount of money with research grants and everything because he was going to provide the scientific research that the pharmaceutical companies wanted provided in, you know, proof that says, hey, we're off the hook. We're not responsible for the autism epidemic. Go on. We're going to go on putting our preservative in the vaccine and nobody can stop us. And on top of which, they got this weird provision in the legislation that created the Department of Homeland Security. In the United, there was a that indemnified vaccine manufacturers for any ill effects of their product. Now, the overt justification there was that during a time of biological warfare, the pharmacies, you know, were the pharmaceutical companies were going to have to rush out the vaccines, and they couldn't be expected to do all the testing. And you know, if some people got hurt and some people got sick, well, that was just you know, war losses, and you know, bad things happen in war, so forth and so on. But it was recognized at the time that this was a blanket indemnification of the vaccine makers for all the damage caused by their products throughout the years, including the last go-around with the swine flu vaccine that killed more people than the vaccine did. And now we have this body of evidence that mercury preservatives, I mean, mercury is known to cause brain problems. I noticed that Alice is in the theaters right now. We're going to go see it in 3D. The character, Lewis Carroll's character of the Mad Hatter, is based in reality, because in Lewis Carroll's day, the felt, the fur that was used to make the felt for quality hats, was prepared for felting using mercury, because if you soak the hair in mercury, it makes the little scales on the outside of the hair stand up, and they'll grab and interlock, and it makes a stronger, much more durable and reliable felt from which the hats can then be made. But hat makers, because of their working with this very toxic material, would develop psychological problems. Mad as a Hatter is based on the real toxicity of working with mercury. And these guys at the pharmacies are shooting it into your kids' bodies with a needle and saying, don't be silly. It could never, ever possibly harm you. So there was this big debate about it. A lot of autistic children out there. One of my very good friends from this TV show that I work on has an autistic son. He did a wonderful documentary. In fact, we had him on the show a while back. I need to get him back on here now. And so we had, all of a sudden, we had this whole bunch of studies that CDC came out with and said, see, the vaccines are harmless. And they all had this Paul Thorsen on them as the key scientist. For all the, you know, CDC said, we're going to give you the money. You're going to come back with a study that says the vaccines have got nothing to do with autism. Now, he's disappeared now with a couple of million dollars in research funding. And now it's coming out. The more they dig into this fraud, they're finding out that he misrepresented his background to his employers and the world, that he's guilty of forgery on the documents that allowed him to just grab the money and skedaddle. And here's where it gets really good. CDC and the other major autism research centers that were out there saying, no, there's no link between autism and vaccines, have known about this guy for months. They have known there was reason to be suspicious of him. They have known there was some kind of a fraud going on. They have known for months, and they never said a word to the public. So, the CDC, the same CDC that promised you that when pigs fly flu was going to decimate the entire planet if you didn't buy a ton of vaccine from their buddies over at the pharmaceutical companies, CDC now has a great deal of egg on its face, and deservedly so. And it's just one more reminder that when a society goes corrupt, it goes all corrupt. The moral and the immoral are mutually exclusive societies. Neither one tolerates the presence of the other. Once a society goes corrupt, it goes all corrupt. All of its institutions go corrupt. And CDC is no different. They are there for the money any way that the money can be brought to their door. So for those of you who have family members who are autistic, and it's a very difficult task that you have dealing with that, those of you who have autistic family, you need to understand that all of this evidence the government waved at you to deter you from suing the vaccine manufacturers, it was all a lie. It was as fake as the hockey stick. It was as fake as Saddam's nuclear bombs. They were lying to you again. So I don't know where Paul Thorson is. If he shows up here in Hawaii, right in the nose. Now, speaking of lying and deceptions here, as I mentioned at the top of the show, ABC Nightline did a show, did a segment about the 9/11 Truth Movement. Very obvious bias and spin. Oh, they're a bunch of kooks. They're nutcases. Everything's already been refuted. Why do you keep making these claims? It's already been officially denied. And, you know, by the same government that's lying to us about global warming and the vaccines and so forth. And it didn't have the effect that they wanted, because the server logs at my website, at least, are showing a major increase in traffic to all of my 9/11 stories. People are digging in. They want to find out. They know they cannot trust the TV networks or the governments, so they're digging in on there. Now, Dr. David Ray Griffin on 9/11 has basically come out and said, we're at the level of proof. This is no longer conjecture and theory. We have proof that what actually happened in New York on 9/11 is not what the government said it was. The government has been caught lying. The burden of proof is on them now. We don't have to prove anymore that the facts don't match up with the official story. If the government wants to make a counterclaim, they must prove their case to the American people. They don't get the benefit of the doubt anymore. You know, fool me once and so forth and so on, okay? It's like Lincoln said, you can fool some of the people all the time and all the people some of the time, but you cannot fool all the people all of the time, especially in the age of the Internet. We're going to take a break here for some commercials. We'll be right back a little bit more on 9/11. Then we're going to go into the economy, climate gate. We got so much stuff to talk about today. We're probably not going to get to the bottom of the list. We'll be right back.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're just wrapping up on 9/11 here. There have been some new developments. Now, if you go back and you look at the news stories that came out basically at the time of 9/11 itself, and I realize it's getting to be a long time ago, and the reason we're keeping this current is because every time the U.S. government wants to go kill somebody or torture somebody or whatever, 9/11 becomes the excuse. In fact, the U.S. government is beginning to sound exactly like Israel, where every time Israel wants to bulldoze another home or drop white phosphorus on children, they say, oh, Holocaust, 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 Holocaust. And so the U.S. government's getting the same things. Oh, 9/11, 9/11, 9/11. Like it's the license to go out and behave like an absolute barbaric jerk. You know, we say the magic incantation, Holocaust, 9/11, and we can do whatever we want, and nobody is supposed to say anything about it. So if you go back and you look at those stories, the head of the FBI actually admitted that there is no evidence at all that any of the named hijacker suspects were ever on any of those airplanes. They have a photo of Mohammed Atta, a blurry, might not even really be him, but they have a photo of him at a completely different airport. And they say, and then he hopped on a plane and he got over here and he went around and got on the plane. Now, even before 9/11, airport security was very tight. You had metal detectors, you had TV cameras, and once again, this wonderful magic thing where none of the cameras were working at any of the gates where these alleged hijackers got on. And by the way, little side note, ICTS Israel, there's another ICTS in Europe, it's not those people, but ICTS Israel, the same security company that was in charge of the gate at Amsterdam, where the crotch bomber got past security, the same ICTS Israel security that was in charge of security at the De Gaulle airport where the shoe bomber got on his plane, was also in charge of all of the airports in the United States that the 9/11 hijackers supposedly got past security with all of their box cutters. And there were early reports of guns and gas grenades as well that sort of went away as being inconsistent with the official story. So now, over on the Alex Jones show, he was interviewing Michael Springman, and according to Michael Springman, he is saying that the CIA arranged for the visas for at least 15 of the 19 9/11 hijacked suspects. Now, right now, that's not going to sound all that surprising because we know that somebody pulled strings to get the crotch bomber on the airplane at Amsterdam. He didn't even have a passport. And this sharply dressed gentleman who has been linked with U.S. intelligence, we don't know exactly how, basically walked him past security and got him on the airplane. So it's looking more and more like this was just, it was just a manufactured incident to sell us all a war. And it happens throughout history. I mean, the Gulf of Tonkin, there weren't any torpedoes there. They had one erroneous report from an inexperienced sonar man who heard his own ship's propellers and screamed torpedo. And it flashed up the chain of command, and almost immediately the captain sent a message saying, false alarm, sorry, new guy on the headphones. And Johnson sort of let that second report fade away and went to Congress and said, we have been attacked. We're off into Vietnam. That's the way these things get done. All war is based on deception, Sun Tzu. All right, moving right along here, and speaking of lies and propaganda, we're going to talk about the economy just a little bit here. There's a story out today, and it's been echoed all over the place, slowly Americans regaining their lost wealth. This one lit up the top LEDs on the bovine excrement meter, just pegged that thing right there. And if you look in the actual story, what it says is that they're basing this regaining their wealth on the increase in the stock market. Everything else is status quo ante. You know, we're not seeing any changes there. But we're gaining our wealth because the stock market is going up. Well, great if you own stock, but for most Americans, they have sold their stock certificates a long time ago just to stay in their homes or to stay eating. And, of course, we are seeing more and more evidence that the stock market is being manipulated so that the government has always got one positive thing they can point to defuse all the other criticism about the economy. There's another story that we have at whatreallyhappened.com linked. It's called How Have U.S. Stocks Defied Gravity for So Long? And it points out right there, if you're looking at the trading action in regular hours, you would think there's no profit made since early September. And they're saying that because if you study the actual trading activity, all of the upside since September 14th has come from the after-hours action. You know, a lot of people think that the stock market opens in the morning and it closes at night and that's it. No, there isn't. There's a lot of stuff that goes on in those off hours, particularly in the futures area. So every single day, minimum volume has been pushing the futures index higher. And they're playing around with all these little numbers and stuff, and it says, oh, well, goodness, the stock market's going up. We've known since the Clinton administration that the plunge protection team working with Goldman Sachs was buying huge futures contracts on the indicator issues, meaning the stocks from which the Dow and the NASDAQ and the S&P are calculated. And if you look at the non-index stocks, they're not performing the same way. But Clinton and now Obama are waving that Dow Jones Industrial Average as their banner that the economy is actually doing okay. And for the insiders, it probably is. But for the casual day trader who's, you know, playing with the little penny issues and stuff, they're getting eaten alive out there. Now, speaking of eaten alive, we all know that for some strange, mysterious reason, even as the economy has gone downhill and the stock market has gone through some serious ups and downs, that for some reason the price of gold, which intuitively you would think would start to increase, it has stayed very, very low. And every time it looks like it's going to start going up, all of a sudden it quiets back down again. And a lot of observers have said this is counterintuitive. Somehow the price of gold is being suppressed. Now, what we're getting from Adrian Douglas is that he has been studying the London Bullion Market Association, the LBMA Bank. And what he's talking about is the reality that most people who buy and sell gold as an investment don't take physical possession of the coins and bullion, because gold is purchased to hang on to rather than other commodities that are purchased to use, like orange juice and pork bellies and so forth. Most in small investors, at least, feel comfortable letting the broker hang on to their actual physical gold. And here's where it gets to be a problem, because this relationship allows the bullion bankers to sell gold in the form of paper certificates that doesn't exist. This increases their profits because there's no cost going out, and they're not actually buying the gold that they claim to have for their clients. They're basically running it the way a bank does, where they don't really have all the money on hand that people have deposited there, because they never expect everybody to take it out at the same time. Now, this for the gold brokerages is illegal. But it's being tolerated apparently because the more of these paper gold investments are out there, it depresses gold prices because of this principle of supply and demand. And this is very beneficial to the central banks, who don't want people abandoning their financial instruments to go into gold. It's beneficial to the stock market, who don't want people to abandon the equities market to get into the gold. It's working out wonderful for everybody, except that it's estimated that something like 50,000 tons of gold have been sold to investors in the form of these paper claim checks that does not really exist. In other words, it is massively shorted. And if when this comes apart, as it's likely to, now that especially being with the impetus of these tungsten-filled gold bars that are out there, this is going to make Bernie Madoff's little ripoff, you know, look down like scotch tape on the fingers, grabbing quarters out of the church collection plate. And as I said, this is not yet calculating the impact of all these reports we're getting from China and Germany about gold bullion from Fort Knox having tungsten cores. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. The panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking about gold shorting. We're talking about gold investing. You know, one of the problems with the United States of America is we, the American people, have been seduced
by the dark side of the force
into believing that a pretty printed piece of paper means something, whether it's a Federal Reserve note or a certificate that says you own so many coins and bars of gold bullion in the vaults at your friendly gold investing place, Inc. And, you know, we've come to, like, be told, oh, pretty printed pieces of paper. Okay, then everything's taken care of. It's like we've come to believe that a warranty is the same thing as a reliable product. It isn't, really. It isn't. It's just a pretty printed piece of paper to lull you into a sense of security when you buy a product which the manufacturer knows is likely to fall apart, you know, has a good, reasonable possibility it's going to fall apart here. So now we have all of these gold investors who are out there in the real world, and they've got pretty printed pieces of paper because, after all, the gold is safer in the vaults of the brokerage than it is in my own home guarded by myself with my shotgun. And now we're finding out that there may be a lot more of those pretty printed pieces of paper than there is gold to cover it. Now, in a normal market where it's churning, you can float that kind of a short position on for a very, very long time. That's how banks operate. Banks don't actually have the money that you deposit in the bank. It's been put into circulation, or it's used as the foundation for the creation of new fictional fiat money. If you haven't seen the video, Money is Debt, you need to look at that. And it's all working. But the bottom line is, it's legal for the banks to do that. It is not legal for the gold brokerages to do it. They're able to do it, and the government turns a blind eye because by suppressing the value of gold, by putting out all these extra gold investment certificates, it helps the banks, it helps the stock market, and it basically just keeps the price of gold down. And so that your money is being given to the people who created this whole financial mess. Now, more than a few experts are realizing something is bad here. And over at the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, their chairman has sent a letter to the chairman of the U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission, basically outlining the tremendous body of evidence they have that there is a massive physical short gold and some silver that cannot be covered. In other words, if every one of you that is holding an investor's certificate for precious metals, gold or silver, if you were all to walk in and say, I would rather have the actual bullion in my own physical control, the brokerages would be bust that night because they haven't actually bought the gold they claim they are holding in trust for you. It's a con. They have sold you a pretty printed piece of paper. And they don't even have to worry about coming up with the money to pay you profits, because the more of these pretty printed pieces of paper that go out, the lower the price of gold is kept, the less they have to actually come up with anything. You could come in and trade in that piece of paper, and they'll give you some other pretty printed pieces of paper, meaning Federal Reserve notes, which are also worthless, and you're just shuffling the paper around. And that's what our entire country has descended to. We believe these pieces of paper mean something. They really don't. When you go back to the founding fathers setting up this nation, the actual money were units of value in silver and gold, also copper and nickel for the smaller coins. That was the money. The word dollar means a weight measure of silver. Now, there were paper notes, but they were claim checks. Silver certificates and gold certificates, they were not the money itself. You could go to any bank with a silver certificate or a gold certificate and trade that piece of paper for the actual gold and silver and put it in your pocket and walk right out of the bank. You can't do that anymore. The Federal Reserve note is not a unit of worth. We are taught from our childhood that the paper note is the money. It can't be exchanged for anything at the bank except for another paper note. There is no silver and gold. There is no worth. It is, in fact, the result of a loan from the private Federal Reserve Bank to the American people, on which interest has to be paid. So over the last 100 years, almost 100 years, since 1913, we, the American people, have slowly but surely been seduced away from this idea that our money is based on silver and gold. By the way, there is a U.S. government law, the Coinage Act of, I think, 1790, maybe a little on the date here because it's been a while since I've looked at it, but it said that anybody who debased the currency of the United States would get a death sentence. That's how seriously the original government of this country understood that money had to have a value and nobody was allowed to play with it. It was a death penalty crime to debase the currency. And yet that is exactly what the Federal Reserve Bank has been doing ever since they were handed control of U.S. monetary policy. And now we're finding out that, you know, back in the 1960s, they took the last of our silver coins out of circulation, and they gave us these slugs, these copper-clad slugs that are completely worthless. But we were told by TV and the news, this is the same thing. It's still money. It's still worth the same thing, only it isn't. Go down to any coin store and buy a real silver quarter and see how much it's going to cost you. That'll tell you how debased our money has become. Now, somewhere along the line, if we're to believe the reports coming out of China and Germany, somebody decided to do the same thing with the gold bullion bars at Fort Knox. They're not solid gold anymore. We are hearing that a lot of these gold bullion bars bearing the marks from Fort Knox are found to have tungsten cores. They're like the clad coins we have in our pockets. It's not real silver. It's copper with plating on the outside. It's not real gold. It's tungsten with gold on the outside. But as long as everybody can be convinced that it's the money, everything works out all right. Until somebody actually drills into the gold bar and says, whoa, the drill bit just broke. What's going on here? German TV just did a show where they cut one of these bars in half and showed the tungsten in the middle. This is not a rumor. This is not something that you're going to go out to Snopes and they're going to say, oh, it never happened. Yeah, it's really out there. And now we're finding out from GATA and these other organizations that the paper trade in gold is massively shorted. There is far more of these pretty printed pieces of paper than there is gold out there. And because these pretty printed pieces of paper are defined in terms of the weight of the gold, not its dollar value, they can't just simply say, oh, we're going to inflate the price of the gold in order to be able to cover all of these short positions on the certificates. If everybody with a paper investment in gold were to go cash them in, go to their broker and say, I want the actual coins and bullion in my hand right now, the brokerages would go out of business that day. They don't have the gold to cover all these paper certificates. And the sad story is that many of you listening to this show who have these, who think you're invested in gold, but you don't have the coins in your own control. You think that they're sitting on a shelf in a vault somewhere. You don't. All you've got is a pretty printed piece of paper that you're going to be looking at and saying, ooh, see how rich I am. It's like, casual investors in the stock market, with the stock market's hideously overvalued. And you're looking at the numbers on that pretty printed piece of paper you get from your brokerage. And you look at the number and you say, wow, I'm really rich. And the first time there's a massive sell-off and there's no support to the stock market, the bottom's going to drop out. And you're going to realize that in an overvalued stock market, and it's still overvalued because of the manipulation, but in an overvalued stock market, only the first ones to sell will get their money out. Everybody else gets a pretty printed piece of paper saying, ooh, look, I used to be rich. I said earlier in this hour, when a society goes corrupt, it all goes corrupt. We're seeing it. Bernie Madoff, the SEC sat and let him do it for all this time. Now we're finding out even Fort Knox may not be on the up and up. We should have an audit of Fort Knox. We should have an audit of the Fed. Actually, we should just get rid of the Fed. You know, forget the audit. Let's just go right to tar and feather and run them out of town on a rail. All right, we're going to take a break for news and commercials. We'll be back in about 8 minutes, so stay tuned. We're going to be talking about taxation, the rest of the economy, cities in trouble, counties in trouble. The Internet may be nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. We'll be right back.
Michael Rivero, What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to hour number two of our show today. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Join us on the air, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. Now, we're talking about the economy, and we're talking about this, what I like to call the death spiral. We're all out of money, so we're not buying stuff, so sales taxes are going down. We're not working, so income tax is going down. What are the governments doing about it? They're raising taxes. Or they're finding new things to tax. This last weekend, I am not kidding you, in Virginia, the police were ordered to just spend all their time along the big highways and write tickets. Tickets. They wrote 7,000 moving violations over the weekend because, hey, they need the money more than you do. I'm sorry. That's got nothing to do with traffic safety. It's got nothing to do with anything except pillaging the American people. That's the stage our country has descended to. The government is looting and pillaging the people. They're just barely hanging on to the illusion of legality. I'm sure most of the people who got those tickets understand full well they may not have actually done something that warranted a ticket. We have a whistleblower coming out of New York saying that innocent people were being framed and set up in order to justify writing tickets with huge fines attached to them. We have counties and cities are taxing 9/11 calls. They're charging fees for services from facilities that your taxes already paid for. Taxes on soft drinks, taxes on bottled water, more taxes on groceries. They want to tax the grocery bags, all under the excuse of, oh, this is good for the environment. You're using these non-recyclable bags. We're going to tax you because that will make the world fresh and clean and green. They don't say how, because the money isn't going for anything except trying to cover their budgetary shortfalls. And a lot of people are beginning to view their own local hometowns as just as desperately greedy as the airlines, where you buy a ticket. I remember the good old days of aviation, where you'd buy a ticket and everything was there. The in-flight meal, peanuts, sodas. For the really long flights, blindfolds, little slippers, magazines, deck of cards. Man, you'd walk off that airplane with a bag full of loot. The glory days of Pan Am. These days, everything's an extra fee. When my wife went to Tucson for her little composers, conductors convention, she had one little bag. Could have been a carry-on, fit the little rack thing, but she didn't want to have to carry it. So we said, okay, we'll check it, no big deal. $25 surcharge for a single checked bag. $50 if it's over a certain weight. That caught us completely by surprise. We're used to the idea that when you buy a plane ticket for yourself, you get to take a piece of luggage without having to pay for it. But that's the state that we're in. Everything that you do costs more money. In fact, you know what it reminds me of? There was this movie made about Popeye, and it starred Robin Williams. Cute little film. Cute little film. And they have a character in there of the tax man. And no matter what Popeye is doing, everything he does, turns left, there's a tax, turns right, there's a tax, asks a question, there's a tax on that too. And we laugh at it because it seems absurd in the movie, and now all of a sudden we realize our governments are getting that desperate for money. They're taxing everything, including the use of facilities you've already paid for with your other taxes. There are taxes on taxes. And the problem I have with this is not just because I'm anti-tax. It's because all taxes and fees do is move the money around. It's not bringing any new money in, and that's what we need. So like I said, and as a matter of fact, there was an article in the local paper where, you know, Hawaii's state government, because they are such a major employer here on the island, and now they're letting people go, that it's actually prolonging the recession. And so they have all these experts go over to the state capitol, and everyone says, well, we've got to raise taxes so we can hire these people back. Raise taxes from who? Every time you increase employee taxes, somebody gets fired. Every time you raise taxes on a business, they have to let people go. Every time you raise taxes on a home, they go into foreclosure. And I wrote a letter to our local newspaper, the Honolulu Advertiser, which they'll probably ignore, as they tend to ignore 90% of the letters that I write. And I said, our economy is a canoe with 10 holes in the bottom and 5 corks. And everything the state government is doing is pulling a cork from one hole and shoving it into another in front of the press cameras. And the politician saying, I'm fixing it, really. And that's what they're doing. And everybody's looking at other ways they can grab money from your wallet, dig under your seat cushions, get a few coins there, and nobody's addressing the real problem. We don't have enough corks. And here in Hawaii, the reason we don't have enough corks is because of TSA having utterly destroyed our tourism industry. But for the nation as a whole, you know, where do you get corks? Manufacturing. You make products other countries want to buy to offset the products you buy from other countries. But the federal government, in its not so infinite wisdom, gave tax credits to American corporations to allow them, to encourage them even, going back to the Bush administration, to send these high-paying manufacturing jobs to other countries. And Obama, despite promises that he would change the situation, has not, in fact, done anything about it. IBM just announced they're offshoring more of their jobs to save money. If we had a courageous president, if we had a courageous Congress, we could change the tax laws to say that if you're sending jobs to other countries, you will pay more taxes on that than if you keep them here. They won't do it because these big corporations are huge campaign donors, and once they're bought, they stay bought. That's honor in Washington, D.C. Now, the latest polls are showing that 82% of Americans are saying that it's time to clamp down on Wall Street. It was a mistake to repeal Glass-Steagall. Everybody recognizes that now. Independent non-government financial experts are saying it's time to break up the big banks. But Summers, Geithner, Bernanke, and the Congress like things just the way they are because they get a piece of the action. When the bankers are out there in Wall Street and AIG and Goldman Sachs are raking in the dough, they turn around and they tithe a percentage, a piece of the action to Congress. That's why Congress is so wealthy. Congress doesn't understand what it's like to be struggling to pay the bills. They're all rich. It's not really a representative body for the most part. Nancy Pelosi is worth $500 million. She has no idea what it's like for a working mother with a couple of kids trying to hang on to a house whose interest rate on the adjustable rate mortgage just went right through the roof. These people don't feel your pain. I know Bill Clinton used to say that all the time. I feel your pain. I really do. I feel your pain. No, he didn't. They're all fabulously wealthy. Bill Clinton was living in the governor's mansion. Then he was living in the White House. He doesn't have to worry about making mortgage payments. He doesn't feel your pain. He's blind to it. He can't see it. When you have people who have lived lives of privilege and comfort and wealth their entire life, they don't represent you because they absolutely don't understand you. And for many of them, as typified by Andrew Carnegie, they see the poor as not even of the same species. They are just there to be exploited, sent off to war, harvested for money. That's their role in society. Or so goeth the conventional wisdom in Sodom on the Potomac. And that is why, even though everybody with an ounce of sense out here in the real world understands what went wrong with the economy, we're not seeing the federal government, the president, or the Congress do anything to change the situation because it works for them. They're getting lots of money. And the banks make more money kicking you out of your home. So they're going to kick you out of your home. That is exactly how ruthless our government has become against the American people. I think maybe it's time that we stood up and said, I don't like that anymore. All righty. Now, interestingly enough, we're just at the end of the segment. I want to hold here because I've got another story. I want to make a point here. And we're going to take a break here for some commercials. Join us on the air, 866-582-9933. When we come back, a little bit of compare and contrast between the American news media and the foreign news media. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
To What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And let's see, just looking at the chat room. Ah, there we are. Okay, lots of stuff happening here. Now, we're talking about this situation where Ben Bernanke, Helicopter Ben, was before Congress, and he was asked about this situation that was earlier reported on. where literally pallets of $100 bills were flown to Iraq in order to prop up the new government the United States was putting in there. And it's something, you know, like $12 billion in cash, mostly $100 bills. And basically we're talking about 281 million individual bills, currency, shrink-wrapped onto these wooden pallets, loaded into these C-130 cargo planes, and flown to Baghdad. And from there, it simply vanished. No accountability, no transparency. Nobody knows where it went, if it was being used to bribe people to go along with the new government, or if it was being used to pay for waterboarding or scalpels or whatever. Nobody really knows. So Ron Paul, yay Ron, was grilling Ben Bernanke and basically asked him, where did this money come from? Because it was not appropriated by Congress, and only Congress is allowed to appropriate these kind of expenditures. It wasn't budgeted. It wasn't authorized by Congress. Where did the money come from? And Ben Bernanke sits there and says, you know, this allegation is absolutely bizarre, which is a non-denial denial. And he says, I have no knowledge of anything remotely like what you just described, which, again, is not necessarily denial. He's just saying, I'm stupid, so, you know, I don't know. But Henry Waxman, back in 2009, detailed the whole situation out. In a 13-month period, from May 2003 to June 2004, the Federal Reserve sent $12 billion in cash from the United States to Iraq. I don't know about you. I could use a piece of that $12 billion back right now. Apparently, most of this came out of the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, from which the bills came to be packed onto these pallets to go to Iraq. I mean, we're talking about 363 tons of money. I can't even visualize that much cash. I mean, the very first Lethal Weapon movie, at the very end, there's a cargo shipping container filled with a car and a bunch of illegally laundered drug money. And that was like this almost unbelievable amount of cash. If you were to go to an ordinary bank and you were to get permission to see how much real currency cash they have on hand, you would be disappointed. You probably have an illusion that you go inside the vault and there's just piles of money everywhere. It isn't so. Most of the on-hand cash of a bank fits on a shelf. There really isn't that much there. Here we're talking about 281 million bills, 363 tons of cash, and nobody knows where it came from, and nobody knows where it went. Now, I am reading this story. Do you remember about 2 years ago, there was this story going around about these new, incredibly accurate counterfeit notes called the super notes? And they were threatening to destabilize the American economy because they were appearing in such volume that it was triggering inflationary pressure on the dollar. And it was destabilizing the dollar, and it was this big threat. And they were trying to blame it on China at the time. I'm wondering if maybe this $12 billion in U.S. currency was simply printed up, unauthorized, unapproved by Congress, and sent over to Iraq to sort of grease the skids for the American, takeover of the government. And it's unofficial money. It comes from the U.S. Treasury. It's printed up by the same paper, same ink, same plates. But it's sort of being, that's not official money anymore. It's like the Federal Reserve is already a legalized counterfeiting operation. They just print up the money that they want according, to a set of arbitrary rules which favors the bank and works against the American people. So is it that much of a stretch to think that maybe the Federal Reserve simply told the Treasury Department, go ahead and crank up the presses. We need a bunch of money to go over to Iraq to help, conquer them, to bribe the locals. And, of course, the money just doesn't vanish. It just doesn't go away. It goes into the pockets of people at Blackwater, Kellogg, Brown Root, all those other people, and it recirculates back around the global economy, back to the United States. So sooner or later, that money does come back into our economy, and it does lead to inflationary pressures. And $12 billion is a lot of money to dump onto the U.S. economy. It's going to be felt. We have a caller on the line, Peter in Los Angeles. Aloha, Peter. Welcome back to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on. Henry Waxman is my congressman. I was with KBR in Iraq. I was at the airport, Baghdad International Airport, for a year as the head of HR for that. And they don't know for sure if it was 12. It might have been as much as $20
billion. Oh, really?
And I followed these hearings very, very closely because, you know, let me tell you what the accountability was like there. I was issued a government cell phone as a contractor.
Yes.
If I lost my cell phone, I was subject to immediate termination and criminal charges. That's losing a cell phone. And by the way, now we have at least, you know, $12 billion, whatever that was. It's probably closer to 20. But also, the U.S. Army, the military, lost 200,000 small arms that are completely unaccounted for. They bought a bunch of AKs and AKMs from Romania and Yugoslavia and blah, blah, blah to supply the Iraqis. It's completely disappeared. 200,000, that's enough to supply a field army.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I wonder how many of those guns are now shooting back at our kids.
Oh, you know, I'm sure there's tons of them. But that's the kind of corruption that went on over there. And I followed that the Waxman hearings, both because I was with KBR, you know, by that time I was no longer with KBR. I was come back in the United States. But and he's my congressman, and I just had seen so much corruption, I wanted to follow up on this. Nothing happened. It fell between the cracks between what's his name, the head of the Bremer, and Petraeus, and whoever else. There was no firm. This is the reason they said for no accountability. There was no firm chain of command or accountability for it. So it just dropped, and it's a missing 2012, whatever you want to call it, $1 billion in over 300 pallets. And at that time, which was July of 2003, you couldn't go anywhere without getting shot at. So I guarantee you that would have had to have had military escort. I mean, just to move that's more than a semi-truck full of cash.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that would have meant, you know, travel orders, convoying, MP support or infantry support or something to get anywhere, to move that kind of thing. I guarantee you they're on those cell phones. Believe me, they'd have been on $12 billion worth of cash. So,
well, I got to tell you, I mean, that kind of thing is scary. We still have the situation where on the day before 9/11, Rumsfeld got up at the Pentagon and said, we've misplaced $2.3 trillion. We have no idea where it went. We've got an accounting office looking at it. And, of course, the next day, one of the planes hit the accounting office. That was the end of that story. Peter, thanks. We'll be right back.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you got to have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. A lot of stuff going on. And during the break, some people are sending me in some stories. Another flashback. This is from 2007. Is the CIA counterfeiting dollars and blaming it on North Korea? And basically, at this time, this is the super notes. A whole bunch of unexplained money was showing up around the world. It looked absolutely perfect. It was deemed the super notes. And the Chinese were being blamed, and this article was North Korea. But according to the Frankfurter Allgemeine, a respected German newspaper, their investigation showed that it seemed to be coming from the Central Intelligence Agency in order for the CIA to basically spend beyond its means, which is a longstanding U.S. government tradition, and at the same time to blame the U.S. strategic enemies for the sudden influx of unexplained currency that was destroying confidence in the American dollar, really what it comes down to. Now, another story, and this one was just coming in out of the Los Angeles Times. And the headline, and this one ought to make you angry. It really should. And if it doesn't, there's something wrong with you. The headline in the Los Angeles Times, this is not a fringe newspaper. This is a major city daily newspaper. GOP Senate race grows heated over Israel. And the tagline is, Fiorina, and DeVore questioned Campbell's level of commitment to the U.S. ally. And my response is, Fiorina and DeVore and Campbell ought to all three be booted out of the race. We are not supposed to decide American elections based on how hard our politicians can suck up to Israel. That is not a controlling, deciding factor. We have problems here at home. We have an economy that is in the Al-Qaeda. We have manufacturing that has all but evaporated. We're embroiled in five wars, covert and overt, started with lies and deception, and they're trying to start a sixth one. Israel is going to have to take care of itself. America needs leaders who put America first, second, and third. We have had decades of a Congress and a president who win their offices based on how hard they could daven to Tel Aviv. Enough is enough. Look at the nation around you. Look at the decline. Look at the rot. Look at the corruption coming from a government whose number one priority is, and their number one campaign slogan is, I'm a better friend of Israel than you are. If they love Israel that much, please renounce your American citizenship and move there. Run for the Knesset if you love Israel that much. Our nation hovers at the edge of collapse, and we need leaders who are going to deal with that reality and not run their campaigns on how hard they can wave the flag of Israel. Enough is enough already. This is an obscenity against the American people. This shouldn't even be in the Los Angeles Times. It shouldn't even be an election year issue, how hard or how much we love a foreign government. Can you imagine the incredible media outrage if instead of Israel, they were arguing over the level of commitment they had to Iran at the moment, South Africa, Japan, China, Korea, Russia, any other country on earth? If our politicians were screaming who was a better friend to these foreign governments, Americans would be scratching their heads and saying, what is wrong with these people? They're not running for office in Russia or China or Australia or South Africa or Zimbabwe. They're supposed to be running for office in the United States of America, and they're supposed to be a representative government. They are supposed to represent the American people. They're not supposed to be representing the government of Israel on Capitol Hill. Now, we're going into a really rancorous election season. There's a tremendous, tremendous anti-incumbency fever sweeping the nation. Together with that, we need to have another consciousness in the voters. America first, second, and third. We're going to vote out the old scoundrels. Let's be careful we don't vote new scoundrels in. If they're taking money from pro-Israel PACs, they are not to be seriously taken as a candidate for a leadership role in the United States of America. Like I said, if they think Israel is that great, move there. Run for the Knesset. If you love Israel that much, where you are willing to suborn and subvert your elected office in the United States to the will of Israel, you should be living in Israel. You should be taking care of Israel. I'm sure they'd love to have you. Go. I mean, they've paid your bills all these years. Go, live, have fun, enjoy. But right now, the United States of America needs leaders and politicians who are ready, willing, and able to deal with America's problems. We don't have that right now. We don't have leaders that will stand up to the Federal Reserve, men like John F. Kennedy or Abraham Lincoln or Andrew Jackson. We need leaders like that. We don't have it right now. We've got these manufactured public relations puppets that always talk a good shop about all the wonderful things they're going to do for us if we just push that little red button. And we push that little red button, and we wind up with the same disaster on our hands. Please stop watching the television news and their message about how things are going in the country, because Obama's going to stand on the TV and tell you everything's swell. If you're losing your home and your business, it's your own fault.
Because you didn't pay your carbon taxes.
Look around you. Look at the vacancy rate at your local mall. Look at the unemployment lines. Look at all the empty foreclosed houses around you. Look at all the young people coming back home in those cheap metal boxes, with those even cheaper American flags made in China draped over them. That's the state of the nation. Look at all the homeless people. The police are trying as hard as they can to keep them out of your sight so you don't see them. You may have to look for them. But once you find them and you look at them, you'll realize the condition of this country and this nation is in the condition it's in because our political leadership has sold its soul to a foreign government. And they're proud of it. This whole article in the Los Angeles Times are a bunch of prostitutes for Israel bragging about how good they are. I'd get into more details, but the FCC would yank our license. This article infuriates me. It should not even be an issue in the United States of America whether our candidates are supportive of a foreign government. That's not their job. It is not the job of the U.S. Congress to take care of Israel. That's Israel's government's job to do. Our government's job is to take care of this nation, and they're failing at it. They are failing at the job of taking care of this country. I want to tell you, it just angers me when I see these things. All right, I was talking about carbon taxes. I have been telling you ever since ClimateGate broke not to engage in excessive premature jubilation because there was so much money and political agenda invested in the global warming hoax that they were going to come back and they're going to keep on trying to sell this. And even as we have journal authors pulling their articles, even as we have Dr. Phil Jones doing a 180 and saying, you know, there really isn't any warming for the last 15 years of the hockey stick, even as all of this stuff is happening in the harshest winter since 1963. And I have been telling you, they're going to come back and try and sell you this lemon again. So we have this article. It's linked to the front page of whatreallyhappened.com. It says, world warming unhindered by cold spells. Scientists. Okay? And what this article is saying is that the fact that it's really cold hasn't affected global warming. I'm sure in their own imaginations it hasn't. And they're basically coming down here, we have satellite data that proves the world is still getting warmer. Okay? They're out there. You know, who are you going to believe? The pretty printed pieces of paper with the pretty lines on it and the hockey stick or your own lying eyes? We're going to pick this up on the next segment. I know we got a caller waiting on the line, but they're coming back at you. They really think they can fool you with this one. We'll be right back.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back here. I'm utterly amazed. I'm looking at the media feeds, and they're actually reporting on the story that the son of the Hamas founder was a spy for Israel. And I'm rather amazed that they're doing that, because anybody going out on the net to get additional follow-up information on this is going to run across the story about how Israel created Hamas through Shin Bet. In order to prevent Yasser Arafat from uniting the Palestinian people into a single political movement to demand their independence here. So I know why they're reporting it. It's all over the Internet today. We drive the news cycle now. Remember when the Downing Street Minutes came out? And it was a whole month. It was the top story on the blogosphere. And finally the corporate media had to report on it because everybody was saying, why aren't you guys covering this? So, yeah, we drive the news cycle now here. Except for the part about the Olympic curling and whatnot. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. John in Pennsylvania. Aloha, John. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. Aloha.
Aloha.
I just want to tell you that there's two major problems with the government.
Two? How lucky for you.
Well, no, there is many. We all know that. But, I'm a little nervous right now. I've never been on the radio.
Don't be
before,
nervous. Take a deep breath. I'm just having fun with you, and we're all friends here. So take a deep breath. All right, we've got two problems with government. What is problem number one?
Well, the first problem is that there's a major problem, really, that the problem with the government, well, there's major problems. There's many problems. We all know that.
Pick one.
And the first problem is that there's many problems. I guess you could say that, right?
Okay, John. Is there a point that we're trying to get to here?
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to say that there's problems with our government, and
well, we know that. Okay, John, and, I'm gonna let you go because I don't think you have your
right. The problem is that there's a lot of that there's. Sorry, just a little nervous.
Okay, John, I'll tell you what. We're to the end of the show, and I got to get back to this global warming thing. I'm gonna let you go here. But think about what you want to say and call in tomorrow, okay? And I'm sorry to blow you off, but we are running out of time, and I really need to get back to this story here. All right, here's what's going on. They're going to come back with this global warming nonsense. Just today, there's another story that came out here today. I mean, the whole thing is really falling apart. To anybody who goes out and does their own research, we've got 700 international climate scientists are saying, no, there's nothing to global warming. The science is not settled. The science has gone completely awry. We have caught them in a total, complete fraud. Even Al Gore is avoiding the media spotlight right now. But amazingly enough, Ban Ki-moon at the United Nations came out today and said, please reject the skeptics' attempts to derail a global climate deal. Because you know, back when I was telling everybody that this is all about a global carbon tax and redistribution of wealth and a global government, and people were writing in and saying that I jumped the shark, oh, come on, that's really silly. And yet here we are with the harshest winter since 1963. Another massive snowstorm is pounding the Northeast. We've got outright fraud in the computer codes. We've got suppression of the opposing points of view in the ClimateGate scandal. Phil Jones has done an about-face and admitted there is no warming. The hockey stick is a complete fantasy. We've got journal articles on which the whole IPCC illusion was based are being withdrawn by their authors saying they really can't support the conclusions that they were paid to come up with. We've got the head of Greenpeace on a videotape admitting they just completely made up that nonsense about Greenland losing its ice sheet in just 20 years. We've got the thing with the Himalayas was just a guy making an off-the-cuff remark and it became chapter and verse for the IPCC. And on and on and on, and still the United Nations is trying to force through this agenda. Because this is not about science, and it is not about the environment, and it's not about the planet Earth. It is about a grab for your money and a grab for more control over your lives. That is the failing of every government institution. They have to justify their continued governance of you by governing more and taking more. Governments, unfortunately, like somebody once said, it's like fire. It's a dread, you know, it's a powerful servant and a fearful master. Governments become like cancers. Once they start growing beyond their bounds, they have to keep growing and they have to keep justifying themselves by governing more and more of your life. We know the United Nations has been pushing a global government agenda for 30 years at least. And one of the three pillars that they're trying to found the global government on is human-caused global warming. And they're not going to let a little thing like the planet actually getting cooler get in their way. So Ban Ki-moon has signed on to Al Gore's Kool-Aid that the Earth is in the grip of man-bear-pig and it's all your fault and you've got to pay for it. And they're going to keep pushing this stuff and they're going to keep trying to sell this. Now, this thing about world war, the globe is getting warmer, even though it seems to be getting colder, is coming out of the World Meteorological Organization. They're being cited as the authority in all of these recent stories saying that, really, it's global warming that is creating the cold weather. But the World Meteorological Organization is another department of the United Nations. It's just another group they've put together to have the stamp of authority and go out to the media and say, oh, yes, freedom is slavery, war is peace, ignorance is strength, and freezing is global warming. And the reason I'm going to continue to pound on this as hard as I can is twofold. One, I reject the idea of global government for reasons I've already stated and don't have time enough to go into here. And second, I reject any government that comes into existence by fraud and deception. Because by definition, that is a government that can never allow freedom of speech or freedom of expression of ideas or freedom of inquiry. They will never dare allow it. Right from the start, they must be a tyranny and dictatorship. So I'm going to keep pounding on this because they're pushing for global government. They're pushing for carbon taxes. It's all about money. Al Gore, prior to ClimateGate, Al Gore was on his way to being the world's first carbon billionaire. He was going to become a billionaire out of absolutely nothing, just pretty printed pieces of paper, the carbon credit. Ken Lay helped him set the scam up. Al Gore was going to become a billionaire doing to planet Earth with carbon dioxide what Ken Lay did to California with electricity. So the bottom line here is there's a lot of money on the line. They've invested hundreds of millions of dollars in setting up all these phony front groups and these so-called authority organizations about climate. They have handed out millions of dollars of funding to organizations like Hadley CRU or Penn State. And these organizations understand that that funding will stop the instant the hoax of global warming is exposed. So they're out there. They're trying to save their own professional reputations. And if you want a model, look back and study the academic writings at the time Galileo was coming out and saying, you know, the sun is really the center of the solar system. Because there was an entire academic institution that was studying epicycles. And rather than say, oh, we were wrong, we're out of work, they attacked Galileo. That was part of the pressure that got him tortured. And we're seeing the same thing again today. The scientists got paid to come to a conclusion. The conclusion is wrong. They don't want to admit that they were wrong. They don't want to admit they were used. So they're going to fight this thing tooth and nail. But above that, and the issue that you need to understand that is really behind why we're seeing so many of the what used to be called respected media institutions of the United States continue to push this, like National Geographic. Although I wouldn't give the, you know, I mean, National Geographic was out there with global warming, but then this last week, let's see, they've been doing crop circles, the real Roswell, UFO this, and snake monster that. National Geographic has blown its own credibility as far as I'm concerned. But the bottom line here is when the world wakes up and realizes the true scale of the hoax of human-caused global warming, they're going to understand once and for all that, yes, as a matter of fact, huge vast conspiracies to defraud the people of the nation, to defraud the people of the world, to trick us into actions we would otherwise not agree to are an absolute reality. Every time you talk about the conspiracy of 9/11 or John F. Kennedy or whatever, the first argument you get back from the government's paid defenders is, oh, a conspiracy that large could never possibly exist. Wrong. We got one. And it's staked out on the ground for everybody to look at and study and learn from. And it's called ClimateGate. This is a fight for truth. It's a fight for freedom. Right now, at least for the moment, we're winning. But we can't afford to be complacent. All right, that's it for our show. End of our Thursday show. My goodness, this week has gone by so fast. We're going to be back tomorrow night talking about whatever happens between now and then. So until tomorrow, stay safe, stay well. Hug your loved ones, drive carefully, and aloha, America.